Welcome to the Wheel Nuts.
Hi, and welcome to Wheel Nerds. This is episode 46. I'm Todd.
I'm Fake Chuck.
And we're going to be talking about motorcycles.
My beard is broken.
What the hell was that?
Well, I just thought we'd inject some new blood into the show.
Why is there a puppet of me here?
Because sometimes I get lonely.
Why is it sticky?
It's a long story.
Oh, no. I need an adult.
Chuck, you are an adult.
Don't talk about that. I don't want to think about that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Have you bought any choppers in the last couple days?
I have spent some money that I recently came into.
Oh, really?
Yes. Some money came into my hands via cards.
I see.
And I've bought some things for the Thruxton.
Well, what a natural thing to blow not birthday money on.
Not birthday money.
Not 40th birthday money.
No. There's nothing wrong with being 40.
Nope. Nothing at all.
It's not old.
Nope. Not anymore.
40 is the new 30.
Yeah, I mean, you've been dead in the Middle Ages, but you're good now. I have a confession to make, Chuck, though, this week.
What?
I figured out what it is with me and cruisers. I'm in love with the idea of cruisers. I love the idea of having a big laid-back bike that I can just kind of cruise down the highway on and stuff.
Okay.
What I don't like is riding on cruisers.
Why?
I just don't like the position. I don't like the control. I don't like the way they handle.
You don't like foot-forward kind of?
No. For actual riding, you know, if I'm riding in a straight line.
Arms high.
One thing. If I'm riding through any kind of corners or any sort of real riding situation, the kind of thing you seek out, I don't really want a cruiser.
Huh.
And that is my problem. I love the idea of cruisers. I don't love cruisers.
I do not love cruisers either. I think I might like them more than you do. I mean, I've owned one more recently than you.
Yeah, yeah.
The DM50, and that was a sweet bike. I was sorry to see that one go.
Well, my cruiser is basically that bike with fat fenders. So, you know.
Those were nice bikes.
I adore the idea of a cruiser. I love the way they sound. I love the way they look. I love sitting on them. I just, when I'm out riding, I'm like, I start to get annoyed.
You know what you need?
What's that?
You need a project bike.
Yeah, maybe.
I've got one here for you.
Do you?
Yes. Pretty. See those pretty pictures of that bike?
Oh, yes. Selling a 1973 Suzuki GT550 project bike. Overall condition is rough, but does have potential. It doesn't look very rough. The bike is complete, minus the following. Missing tank, side covers, headlight and ears, air box and carbs. The exhaust is rusted out and not usable. What is left?
I mean, it's all there in the picture.
I know. I do have the Indiana title for this bike. The motor turns over very nice and compression feels strong. Great start for a project, or use these parts to finish yours. Price is $300. OBO. Thanks. Call or text. Blah, 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 blah. I can try and get some pics later this evening if interested. The what? Bikes pictured are not the GT550 for sale. Just some motivation.
So he's posted pictures of other people's bikes?
I have parts of a bike that looks like this. You can buy it. You too could have 30% of this bike at 30% of the price.
Let's see. Okay, wait. Let's go back here. So he's missing the tank, side covers, headlights, airbox. So he has a motor and a frame and wheels.
Well, so he sort of has a motor. He's everything but the carbs and the airbox. So he has a motor that gets a fuel air mixture through some unknown.
He has an engine minus things that connect to the engine.
Yeah.
And I assume a frame and wheels.
Probably. Yeah, it's a bit odd, isn't it?
I kind of wish I could see pictures of this bike.
Bike, air quotes. Yes, exactly. Because, yeah, I'm
That's
I'm missing a motor, minus all the things that make a motor work. So it's a boat anchor. It's an attractive boat anchor.
But he has a title for it.
Thank God.
It was at one time called the bike.
Yeah. I have the title for this bike.
Compression feels strong.
Yeah. It pops my thumb off.
It turns over. What?
No, it doesn't. It turns over if you... Oh, you know how it turns over is if you push it down a hill. Bump, 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 bump. Turns over great.
See, it crushed that can. Compression's nice.
You know, the funny thing is I feel some motivation. Yep.
get that bike.
Motivation.
Wow. That's a great ad.
That's really something.
We have an ad that's on for a bike that's completely on the other side of that spectrum.
Okay. So on the opposite side of the spectrum from the bike missing all the bike parts except for the boat anchor bits.
It's a 250 Ninja. That's a cool bike. 2004
Ninja.
It's not
just a 2004 Ninja, Chuck.
No, it is the most ballingest Kawasaki Ninja 250 ever. This is a long ad. We can't read all of this, but there's
some. We'll grab some highlights.
Okay. You pick one.
Oh, my favorite is features? Yeah, it's got them. Like, how about it comes in custom metallic Get Rich or Die Trying Yellow? Yellow equals the new whatever color you want. Yellow equals Mother Nature's warming device.
Power brakes, power steering? That's a fatty McFatty yes. You have the power in your arms as you flex those guns and show them to the ladies.
It's even got aftermarket privacy windshields, so you can do whatever the F you want as you blitz past zombies on the freeway. You'll be chilling behind a dark smoke windshield of comfort and maintaining the mystique and mystery that comes naturally when you own a Ninja 250.
What? Air conditioning? Check. Keep cool, my brother. It has the best AC on the planet. The faster you ride, the stronger it blows.
It certainly does. Aftermarket annoy the neighbors' chrome exhaust pipes? You know it. And two of them to really announce your presence.
Okay, so this guy is selling a Ninja 250.
He's selling the shit out of a Ninja 250 is what he's doing. And then my other favorite part is his pictures.
Yeah.
Where he's helpfully got a chick in a color-matched leather jacket and Daisy Dukes to stand next to his bike on a desert road.
You know, it's a nice-looking Ninja 250.
Yeah, it is a really nice-looking Ninja 250.
It's got green underglow lights.
Ooh, hot.
He's got the LED green, because red and blue are illegal here.
Sure.
But why not do yellow?
Well, you know, if it's the most ballingest Kawasaki Ninja 250 ever, yellow isn't going to cut it.
It's got a clean tile. Read on for more kick-ass details.
$3,000.
Oh, God. You know, it almost reads like Superdell is selling this bike.
Yeah. The funny thing about it is it's kind of close to what it would cost new. But as near as I can tell, this is fairly new-like.
Yeah, so new, this bike's maybe $4,000, $39.99. Mine was a 2004, and mm-hmm. I bought mine for $2,000.
Mm.
He's got 16,000 miles on it.
In fairness, yours wasn't the most ballingest anything. In fact, I would dare say yours was not at all balling.
What? Mine was totally balling.
No more than 5% balling.
It was a balling Ninja 250.
I'll give you 7% balling.
It was a well-maintained beauty with a bottle-fed diet of oil and lube, carefully raised and housed entirely within my garage. It only fell over, I'm sure, 3 or 4 times.
And only leaked gas all over the Wendy's parking lot every time you were there.
Overfilled it.
Unfortunately, it was owned by a Chuck.
Owner fault. Yeah.
So you two can own the most ballingest Kawasaki Ninja 250 ever.
He is really just selling the hell out
He's
of this bike.
He's selling the shit
but,
out of this thing.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's still a Ninja 250.
On the other hand, I got to give him credit. This is a fairly badass looking Ninja 250.
Yeah, but I mean,
yep.
Why that bike, you know? I mean, if you're going to do all this stuff to a bike.
It's probably what he had.
He's just trying to get as much back out of it as he can, I guess.
Could be it's her Ninja 250 that he pimped out for her.
Oh.
And then she's getting something else. I mean, she does have color-matched leathers.
They broke up.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Wow. Okay. So that's a bike.
Yep. It's a balling bike.
Now, what if I'm looking at this bike
okay.
to buy, and I carefully research my bike purchase of this ballingest Ninja 250,
mm-hmm.
but my partner still scorns me as a douchebag?
Okay. So first of all, you will always be scorned as a douchebag by somebody, no matter what you buy.
That's true.
And that's partly because you're Chuck, and partly because everybody's always scorned by somebody no matter what they buy. I mean, you go out and buy a kick-ass BMW, the wheel nerds will make fun of you. You know? You go out and buy a nice Harley, the wheel nerds are going to make fun of you. Go out and buy a Rat Pack Strom, the wheel nerds are going to make fun of you. You can see where this is going.
Yeah, there seems to be a pattern.
Yeah. But there will always be somebody who, for like them, your bike is just anathema. It's the awfulest bike ever. You bought a Buell Ulysses?
You're wrong. Get a... fill in.
An X. Yeah, exactly. In the case of the Buell, in fairness, they're mostly right.
Shut up. But yeah, okay, so the motorcycle, our hobby is so fragmented into these distinct tribes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cruisers, sport bikes, adventure bikes.
Big sport bikes, small sport bikes, Honda, kickstand sport bikes.
Yamaha, Ducati. There's someone's always going
to. You are lame to somebody, guaranteed.
The thing is, you know, what do you do about it? Do you still ride with them?
Well, That depends.
Does that mean you're in the wrong group of riding friends if they're all pointing and laughing at you for looking like a pirate?
Well, it depends on whether you can point back and laugh at them for something.
I thought...
And they're okay with that.
I thought it depended on if you could pull off the pirate look.
Well, there is that, too.
Because, you know, Johnny Depp can pull it off.
You got big guns.
Big gun. You mean like these? These... Look, because this hurts to do.
What, the 22s?
Ouch. I think I cramped something.
Chuck's packing 22 center fires.
Oh, man, I just pulled something there. Can you spot me when I pick up my soda?
And he has soft hands. Soft geek hands.
It's true. But look, I have a callus.
There you go. That's from your wedding ring.
Shut up.
But yeah, I think you just got to ignore people, frankly. You know, they're going to, somebody's always going to hate your bike, and sooner or later they're going to be like, that thing's a piece of crap. And you'll be like, whatever.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's going to depend on the group you're with. If it's the group making fun of you and you guys just make fun of each other, that's cool.
Yeah.
If you're riding Ducati and all your guys are diehard Harley dudes, you might want to consider looking for a different group.
You might just be getting a lot of abuse in that group.
Yeah, you know, if they set your bike on fire and roll it down a hill while laughing.
That's usually a sign that you should look for another group.
Or you're riding a Buell Ulysses.
And if all your friends are Billies, who cares what they think anyway?
They don't think.
So speaking of the Buell, how's she doing? Is she back to life?
No.
I'm shocked.
Unshock.
I'm so unshocked.
I got the parts.
Ooh.
The parts came. They're in a box.
Uh-huh. And?
I haven't opened the box yet.
How are you supposed to put the parts on the bike if you don't open the box?
I'm afraid to.
Oh, like they'll burst into flame?
I'm afraid I'll burst into flame. I mean, the parts came in the middle of the night delivered by a little old Chinese man.
That's peculiar.
They're covered with all of these stamps from foreign countries.
Interesting.
And some sort of wards and seals against evil.
The one corner's been chewed upon, a little, looks like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, my daughter picked up the box.
Oh, okay. She's going to grow a tail.
Yeah, no, I haven't started on it yet.
I mean, this is a cheap fix if this is what fixes it.
Yeah, this is, you know, I spent less than $100 total for all this stuff.
Cool.
If this is what fixes it, then cool, I'm happy.
Win.
Our listener, Eric, was talking about that combustion sensor. I looked that up. Yep. That's about 150 bones.
Yeah, you're getting into the realm where you get done with these cheap ignition parts and you're getting into sensor town. Sensor town is a goddamn expensive place. That's why I'm going to bypass one of mine.
And if sensor town doesn't fix it, the other thing I'm looking at is the thing a lot of Buell guys say is you need to chase down your harness, your wiring harness, and see if there's a break or a raw wire or a hidden break under sheathing.
And the last guy who did that has like big, long, scraggly hair and a big, long beard and lives in a tiny cabin in the woods. And he's like, I'm short of the frame.
You make that joke, but a lot of Buell guys have done it.
And most of them are living in cabins with giant, shaggy beards going, resistance. Ohms.
Yeah, you know, if it gets to that point, I might have to make a call there.
Yeah, our listeners say KTM. I gotta advise against that just because I've known a few people with KTMs.
The listener poll, the KTM eked out past the Rat Bag V-Strom.
Yeah.
By one boat.
Yeah, it was a near thing. On the other hand, Suzuki's offering 0% on Stroms right now.
0% financing for 5 years on V-Strom 650 adventure bikes.
That's a pretty good deal.
With windshields and boxes.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good deal, dude.
$9,800.
Yeah, that's an awful lot for 650. Although this does have ABS, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it switchable? Well, you can make it switchable to V-Strom. Somebody has already figured out how to switch X on the V-Strom, where X is everything.
I think the Stroms is a switchable, isn't it?
It can be.
It can be.
Like everything else. Where's my paperclip?
The question I got to answer, though, 0% interest for 5 years, but is it worth the Todd factor?
What do you mean?
Will I be able to stand radiating smugness that comes off of you every time you see me get on that bike?
I don't know.
It's hard to say. I'm leaning to no. I mean, just
intolerably smug.
Will you still be able to strap a helmet onto your head?
Activate Smugotron.
What happens if I get on that bike after you've put the helmet already on your head?
I could be stuck for days.
Will you just keel over with an aneurysm?
Nah.
Will it be like a Japanese horror movie where there's be spray of blood coming out of your face shield?
Chuck, you're only one man in the giant, bigger world stromination goals. Granted, you're a semi-famous podcaster man, and by semi-famous, I mean as many as 11 people might be interested. But, you know, you're only one man. World stromination has a ways to go still.
Yeah, but you're sitting next to me.
Also, you'd have a Wii, and yours wouldn't make all the strange noises mine does, and it wouldn't need to be adjusted near as much as mine does.
Oh, it passed the wife cool factor much more readily than the old Strom.
Huh, interesting.
She looked at them side by side, and she was just like, oh, yeah, that's a much cooler bike.
Well, in fairness, most of the Strom she's seen of me on them.
Well, this is the picture straight off of their website.
Oh,
like the same angle shot and everything of the Leader Strom versus this one. She was like, I like that one a lot better.
Well, Leader Strom has a certain aura to it. It says, nerd! So, you know, it has this aura of dorky yet incredibly functional, which takes us nicely into, we should talk about our guest. So everyone has seen on the old 80s bikes these fairings, these Windjammer fairings
made by
this company Vetter.
Mr. Craig Vetter.
Yes. Craig Vetter gave his name to the company, and then the company went away, which opinions differ on.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about Craig Vetter is he's still at it.
Very much so. He's at
very
a lot
much
of,
still at it.
He's not just at fairings anymore.
He's really at it. So let's hear from Craig Vetter. All right. So we're on with Craig Vetter, the patron saint of aerodynamics and all-around motorcycle mad scientist and maker of the Windjammer fairing, which you may have seen on almost every 80s bike that anybody rode any distance, it seems like. How's it going, Craig?
Happy to be here.
So, Craig, the first thing I gotta bring up, the Windjammer, because our listeners won't forgive me if I don't bring up the Windjammer. I had one of these on my old Suzuki GS, and all my coworkers named it Purple Rain.
Because why?
Well, because Prince had one on the bike in the movie.
He didn't. No, he didn't. He had a sleazy copy Windjammer.
Oh! No kidding.
Man, I wish I'd known that.
Yeah, no, it was a sleazy copy.
Let's talk about where the Windjammer came from, you know.
And apparently the universe of sleazy copies.
Yeah, who started stealing it?
They started stealing it just as soon as they realized that it was something that was selling. Well, I had just graduated from the University of Illinois and as a designer, and that would have been 1965. And I never went to work for anybody. My hero was Buckminster Fuller, and Buckminster Fuller said, you don't have to worry about the future if you just do more with less. Well, motorcycles did more with less. Motorcycles got 40 miles to the gallon in an era when cars got 12 or 13. So I just started making things for my motorcycle in 1966, 67. These really, really pretty one-piece fiberglass fairings, and I learned how to do all this stuff by myself. By 1970, I looked up in my little shop, and I saw one of everything I had made, and I thought, wow, I've never seen one of everything I've ever made. It was a black one and a white one, about five different fairings. So there were 10 different fairings hanging from the ceiling, and I thought, boy, I've never seen this before. And it was winter when no one wants this stuff. And then I thought, you know, these are really great fairings, but this is a bad product. I need to redesign, take all the good qualities from these 10 different fairings and make one fairing that would fit every motorcycle. And that would be a good product, not only a good fairing, but a good product. And so that was what caused the Windjammer to be made. It was to take all the qualities of these first fairings and build them into a fairing that would fit all motorcycles. And that's why it was so successful, because it was a good fairing to start with, but it fit everything. And so that meant that we could sell to a dealer. A dealer could buy two or three, and he would know any motorcyclist that came through the door, it would fit his motorcycle. At worst, he would have to buy a piece of hardware to make it fit. So it was one fairing that fit every motorcycle made for another $30 piece of hardware. It would make it that was the difference between one Windjammer and another. It was very popular. We doubled in size every year. So imagine now, we're in this Midwest, and we're in a cornfield, and two little Morton buildings on 3 acres in the Midwest, and we're doubling every year. The Windjammer was the right thing at the right time in 1970. Everybody wanted them. We could not make them fast enough. And by 1978, we'd made over 1 million of these things. A million windjammers. That's a lot. By 1978, my company, only Harley-Davidson, was bigger than Vetter. And we were making money.
In sharp contrast.
Yeah. And so let's go back to 1970. There were people that spotted that we were hopelessly behind all the time. Ever since the beginning of the windjammer, we were hopelessly behind because it was the right thing at the right time. And so there were a lot of people who copied it. A lot of people. You know, 5, 6, 7, 8. And Prince, the artiste, had a copy windjammer on his bike.
Wow. I had always just assumed it was like a different model of windjammer because it doesn't look quite like the one I had. It wasn't – first of all, it didn't have the cool kind of the pinstriping on it. It was just a solid color. And it looked like it didn't have all the cool glove boxes and all the gewgaws.
Because it was crap.
It was apparently crap. That's right.
What was the itch that made you make this first fairing? I mean, was it just like, hey, I've got this bike, I want to tour on it, and I hate wind?
Well, it was pretty much like that.
Was it going to mess up your Fabio-like hair at the time?
Yeah, hair at the time was pretty impressive, I got to say.
It is. Man, these pictures we're looking at, they're way groovy. You've missed your calling as a romance novel cover model.
Well, maybe not. You don't want to ask questions like that.
No, we do.
It was real simple to me. Buckminster Fuller said, do more with less. Motorcycles did more with less, and I decided that I would make things that made motorcycles better transportation. I talked about it for about a year, and then I drove to the Aspen Design Conference in 1966 on my bike in the middle of Kansas somewhere. And I thought, yeah, okay, I want to make this fairing, but I had not done it yet. And I was going west, and the wind was blowing hard, and I was kind of laid over on my tank bag and kind of peeking ahead once in a while. I don't know if you ride this way, but in those days, just on a freeway, you could kind of watch the center line looking down instead of looking ahead for most of the time to stay out of the wind. So I'm bent over the set, bent way bent down and kind of checking out how far ahead the next car is, but mostly looking down with my eyes sort of shut because the wind is ferocious. And there's a time in Kansas on the second day out when a truck passed me and he blocked the wind for a moment. And I sat up. I just sat up and I opened my eyes because I could. And all of a sudden, it went technicolor. I saw the green grass. I saw the blue sky. My eyes were no longer fluttering. And then he went on by. And I went back down into my crouched position, and I began to think it's time to make this motorcycle fairing that I've been talking about. Well, my first love before motorcycles and before design is airplanes. I love airplanes. Airplane guys are my heroes. Jimmy Doolittle, Charles Lindbergh was until he became a tree hugger, and now he's no longer a fallen hero.
There's a whole story going on there.
If you look on my webpage, you'll see a picture of my fallen hero hugging a big tree.
Sometimes trees need hugs.
Well, I have planted.
If you find a tree with a knot hole positioned appropriately.
Well, I've planted probably 4,000 or 5,000 trees in my life. And back at our factory in Illinois, I bought out the Onarga Nursery one summer, 1970. I went out to buy a couple of trees, and I went up there, and they had like hundreds and hundreds of trees. And I said, "What?" And they were all lined up like they're ready to be shot in a firing line. I said, "What are you going to do with those?" It was in August. He said, "Well, the season's over, and we're just going to burn them." And I said, "Well, will they live?" And he said, "Well, yeah, but you got to ruthlessly cut them back and water them." And so I said, "Deliver them." So we just closed the Onarga Nursery brought these 500 trees to my three acres in Illinois, and we closed the place down. There were maybe 35 people, 40 people working for me making fairings, and I just said, "Okay, stop working here." And everybody got a beer. We got the auger out and drove down the property line and threw these trees in. And there's a forest back there. My old factory back in Illinois has turned into a forest.
What kind of trees?
They were everything they had. Everything.
Oh, okay.
Because they were all the unsold trees.
Okay.
And so here we are now in California, and I did the same thing 20 years ago. I live in a forest. It was a kind of an open ranch in 1984 when we moved here, but I would go out and buy out nurseries. Anything you had, I bought and planted. And my boys and a tractor and an auger, and it's a dark forest here. There's a canopy over the road, and I love trees, but trees are for using. Trees are.
Oh, no argument.
They're not for hugging. They're not for. They grow over again. They grow anyway.
No argument. I love to cruelly shove trees into table saws and such.
Anyway, motorcycles, airplane guys were my heroes. In my first book I ever bought, I still own, when I was 10 years old, Air Progress in 1951, 52. I just love airplanes. And my sense of design, I think, probably came from airplanes and what flies. And Alexander Cartvelli, who is the designer of the Republic P-47, at one time said, if it looks right, it'll probably fly right. And it's true. So my sense of design translated well over to motorcycle design and what shapes are going to go through the air. I had pretty good intuition about what would go through the air. And then riding for hours and hours and hours, you learn what gets wet, what doesn't get wet, what you have to do. And somebody had to be the test driver, and it was always me.
That's horrible.
Well, I got to go test the product, guys. So, well, bye.
So you're saying that we owe the origin of the Windjammer to the fact that you didn't have a helmet with a good visor?
We owe it to Buckminster Fuller, who said, you don't have to worry about the future if you just do more with less. And motorcycles did more with less. And really, you know, that is the sequence. And it controls my life today. I've modified the concept just a little bit.
You're kind of taking it to extremes with the with this fuel economy challenge. Talk to us a little about that, because those are some wild looking machines.
Yeah, well, it turns out that here we are back in the 1970s, and I'm kind of inventing what touring equipment should look like: touring fairings, touring saddlebags, and just, you know, shooting from the hip. But it wasn't until 1975 Honda came out with their GL1000. It was a ponderously heavy motorcycle for the time. It was a real chunk of a bike compared to the Honda 750 that had preceded it. You know, had made such history in 1969 when they launched that thing. But here we are in 1975, and Honda came out with this just ponderously big GL1000. Now, by today's standards, it's really not. But in 1975, it was. You'd be lucky to get 40 miles to the gallon with it. By 1978, they were bigger. They were up to 1,200 cc's. The bikes people wanted by the late 70s were no longer getting 40 miles to the gallon. But there were plenty of cars that were. There were cars that were getting 40. So Honda CRX would get 40 miles to the gallon in 1978. So here's this guy who believes in doing more with less, found himself in a business that, number one, he'd pretty much done everything that he could think of doing, but he was no longer proud of motorcycles. I was no longer proud of motorcycles by 1978 because the motorcycles people wanted had become guzzlers. And the trend has continued. The bikes that people want today are big bikes. They're lots of horsepower. They're bikes that are somewhere in the 30s. High 30s, maybe mid 30s miles per gallon. And so it was a good move for me to sell it all. I don't want to be a part of this, but I did wonder, how much power does it take to push a person down the road? And at that time, the speed limit was 55. What does it take? Because no one could tell me. No one knew. Everyone assumed that more was better. That
lots, you had to have tons, bajillions.
Yeah.
So the question is, how much power it takes to push a person
down the road.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
It takes that much.
Yeah. You know, you want to find out, I read a really, really interesting thing here recently. It was that you want to know how much energy it takes. Drive your motorcycle down the road, up there, anywhere, a mile. Drive it a mile. And then push it home. Isn't that dramatic? It really is dramatic. I didn't make that up. I read that someplace. Anyway, so here we are back in 78, and people want ever bigger motorcycles, ever. It's bigger. You know, you can't have too much power. It was, you know, kind of a typical American.
Not enough bike.
Yeah, well, you can never have too much power. But you could, because it turns out that it's horsepower that consumes our energy. Let's step back a little bit. Right now, you drive around Salt Lake City with all the fuel that you burn in your car, your motorcycle, your RV. 3 out of 4 gallons is imported. That's significant. A lot of that comes from countries that hate your guts. What do you think about that? Are you just going to say, well, I don't care, I'm just going to keep giving you money? So you guys that hate our guts can go ahead and try to kill us, which is what they're trying to do. Some of these guys that hate their guts, they want you dead. Now,
well, to be fair, there's not a whole lot of people that don't hate specifically my guts.
That's true.
Well, let's stick with fuel, because 3 out of 4 gallons is imported.
Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised it's actually not higher, to be fair, to be honest.
Well, it's growing. When I began, it was like a 1 out of One out of five was imported back in the 60s, but three out of four. So it has done terrible things to the security of the United States. But you can do something about it. You're not a victim. I'm not a victim. All you have to do is burn one quarter of the amount of fuel that you burn now. And let me add to that, live better. Ah, that's kind of neat. Let's go back now to 1978 after I sold the business, and I wondered how much energy it does take. In 1980, I put on a fuel economy contest that went from Colorado Springs to Cripple Creek and back. It was at the first Vetter rally that we had in 1980. And it turns out that there was a pattern. There were a lot of bikes, but there was a pattern. And the less horsepower burned the least amount of fuel. So the next year, I went to California, went to our house in California, and put on five more years. A fuel economy contest, and people like myself got caught up with the idea. What does it take? How much power do we need to go down the road at 55 miles an hour? The people were all over the place. The first guys that made their challenge machines in 1980-81 had weed eater engines. Some of them had weed eater engines. One of the guys had a Honda Passport. What were they? 50 cc's
for 80, 30 cc's? I think.
No, they weren't 80.
Not 80.
But these things did not have enough power to go 55. But over the years, next year, people began streamlining. And the next year, they began streamlining a little more. And by 1985, we discovered that the formula for going 55 miles an hour in real conditions, you know, stopping and starting, because the contest ended up being starting in San Luis Obispo, California, and driving to Carmel, California, which is where we live today, 130 miles. Powerful headwinds, generally. It's hard to go 55. There was no time to stop. To pee, you had to do it in 2 hours 45 minutes plus 15 minus nothing, because if it was minus nothing, it means that you were speeding. But so anyway, this is serious stuff. And so after 5 years, the shape became clear that you needed a streamlined shape around at the front, pointed at the rear, and needed to be as small as you could fit a person into. And Charlie Parethian, who had a company called Rifle Fairing. Charlie had worked for me for years. He was now on his own because I'd sold my business and he left also. He and I kind of mutually developed this fairing shape, called the Rifle Fairing. He developed the first one and I said, give me that thing and I'll do the tooling and we'll make it real pretty. And then he made it. They vacuum formed it. Everybody used that fairing from then on, from 1984, 83, 84, 85, because it was perfect. It was right. You just had to make yourself real small and squeeze into this thing and put it on. It turns out it takes about 8 horsepower. Now, if you can live that way, if you can ride your motorcycle, you know, all bent over like that for 2 hours, 3 hours, you can get 450 miles to the gallon. That's incredible. Wow. And that's what we learned after 5 years. And there were a number of people who discovered this. So what happened after that, after 1985? Nothing. Nobody really drives that way. Nobody wanted a motorcycle like that. You couldn't go grocery shopping with it. You couldn't cross. You couldn't drive to from Carmel to Salt Lake City on it. It was just a backbreaker. So I realized that I had missed something. And what I had missed was the whole concept of ending up with a new kind of a motorcycle that could actually change the world, that you'd actually want to drive. Those things are all in museums. Mine's in a museum. Charlie's is in the Smithsonian. There's one down at San Diego. Honda crushed theirs. But they did. That's what they do, you know, because they, you know, greedy plaintiffs. Where'd you get that motorcycle? Well, you know, so-and-so at Honda made it. Well, I think there's money there. Let's sue them. You know, that's what they do. At that time, I was making babies. My two boys were just little, and I sort of dropped out of motorcycling through the 80s and the 90s, and now back in, following my passion, which is doing more with less energy. But it's a little different now. I learned a big lesson with that first fuel economy contest. We didn't change the world. No one really rides with those things. But in California, there are some awful, awful headwinds out on Highway 1, El Camino Real. And so I thought, wow, let's have a contest at 70 into these 30-mile-an-hour headwinds. That's hard to do. Let's make it tougher. Let's say that you have to sit up and be comfortable. Let's say that this has to be your first choice vehicle in the garage. Ah, that's getting kind of hard. Now let's even make it harder. Let's say that you've got to carry a useful load, and the useful load that I have picked arbitrarily is 4 bags of groceries sitting upright with bananas and things hanging out the top. So the goal today will absolutely for sure, if fuel ever becomes precious, and I don't know if it will or not, the vehicles that we're developing in the current Craig Vedder fuel economy challenges will be what you want. If there's no fuel at the pumps, and that's your transportation, you will have to do this just economically. You will have to be streamlined, and you will have to have much less horsepower than what popular culture believes. And you will want this because you can go to the grocery store, if there's any groceries, and you know you can carry stuff. You can carry your dog. You can carry, you know, it really is quite a machine. So about 3 years ago, I decided that I would learn myself. What does it take? And what it takes is about 16 horsepower, 16 horsepower, streamlined. You can sit up and be comfortable. You can have a big hold in the storage area built into it, well within the shape that you already generate when you go through. You don't have to have like extra saddlebags that make big blocky air disturbances behind your motorcycle. And you go to the webpage and you'll see they're all streamlined and they're all fish-shaped, and they do exactly what I wanted to do. They go, let me tell you, I picked three years ago, I picked a Honda Helix as being a starter machine because they're cheap. They last forever. They really are mechanical marvels. I like to chuckle when I look at them. I mean, I really, really love my Helix. I think Honda put their brightest engineers into developing the Honda Helix, and then their least bright stylist.
Can't really deny, although I keep looking at your fairing and all I can think is, my God, I need to paint that like a trout. Because that would be awesome.
Well, you know, it's not finished. I came in from the shop to talk to you tonight. We have this big contest coming up in 10 days, less than 10 days, and it will be finished at that time. Mm-hmm. And you will be very, very impressed. Do you know who Jerry Branch is?
Not familiar with it,
no.
Jerry Branch was the he's a head designer for motorcycles. He's a brilliant guy. He's probably the man behind every fast Harley Davidson in the 60s and 70s through the 80s. He was a big thing in those days to have cylinder heads flowed by Branch, if that's what you say. I've got heads flowed by Branch. He understands how to get fuel into an engine. Guy's brilliant. Anyway, I interviewed Jerry a while back, and I inducted him to the Motorcycle Hall of Fame. But when I interviewed him, I said, what do you do here, Jerry? And I usually ask that question when I usually know the answer, but I was really surprised. I said, what do you do, Jerry? And he said, I make engines make more power. I said, okay, well, that sounds right. So I said, how do you do that? And what do you think his answer was? How do you make engines make more power?
I guess make the innards flow more, make the, interesting. Make them bigger? Well, that doesn't make any
Get
sense.
Get more air in them?
How's that? I don't know.
Improve airflow?
He gave me 4 words that said it and changed my life. He said, burn more gas and air. It's 5 words. Well, that's somehow escaped me. But that's exactly what hot rodders do, isn't it? They got bigger carburetors. They got they supercharge. They turbocharge. They all burn more gas and air. So what do we want to do today?
We want to burn less gas. It's always the goal, isn't it? Oh, what's the fuel economy on that? I got a Prius.
Burn less gas. That's right. So we have to live with less horsepower. And the way to live with less horsepower is to be streamlined. It's this wonderful little circle.
So do you think it's going to take to make a motorcycle, the normal, like a regular part of just something you drive in the U.S., is it going to take us being forced by the supply of gas going down? I mean, is that what it's going to take at this point?
No, I don't want to force you to do anything. I don't want to force anybody to do anything. But I am here with the solution. If it does, if fuel becomes precious, and you want to go on the highway, you want to go on the road, you want to go at highway speeds, and if you want to be able to afford it, I can show you how to get 150 miles to the gallon. We are up to, and that's important. I think it's important. If we all got 150 miles to the gallon right now that were previously were getting 40 miles to the gallon, we wouldn't have to import any fuel, would we?
Right. Are any of your designs or any of the designs that are out there more than 2 wheels, like a 3-wheel vehicle? Or
we had last year, we had a 3-wheeled Ninja conversion done by a Ford engineer. He almost whipped us. The only reason he didn't was because the diesel in the challenge did so well. You take a look on the webpage. It was the San Luis Obispo challenge of a couple of years ago.
Oh, the big red torpedo one, yeah.
That kind of alerted us to the potential of the Kawasaki Ninja 250, because that's what the guy had stuffed in there, was a Ninja 250. Yeah, a motorcycle, by definition, is two or three wheels, and I don't care. But four wheels is something else. When you get four wheels, now you're subject to crash testing and emissions and sound and DOT glass and fireproof this. And I mean, there's this nightmare of governmental compliances. If you got four wheels, you got two or three wheels, you can pretty much do anything. It is a great freedom to stay with two or three wheels. They leave us alone.
More people start going to the two to three wheelers, then I could see that flipping around and
good point.
Regulation come crushing down on that.
Well, it's all about control, isn't it?
Yeah.
They want to, if everybody is out being a renegade and they seem to be out of our leader's control, then they'll do that. But the fact is, motorcycles probably never will be everybody's first form of transportation. They'll always be kind of on the side. I remember I had a conversation with Phil Schilling, Cycle Magazine. We had Cook Nelson and Phil Schilling back in the 70s, and they were intellectual motorcycle magazine editor/road racers. These guys are brilliant. They were just inducted into the Motorcycle Hall of Fame here in the last couple of years. Anyway, it's always been my opinion that motorcycles can and should be reasonable transportation. But Phil said they're not, Craig. They never will be. Fuel is really going to have to be exceedingly hard to get for motorcycles to make any kind of inroads. Because the fact is, when it comes down to it, it's a whole lot easier to streamline a four-wheeler than it is a three-wheeler. That's the truth. I could probably get better mileage if I was driving with four wheels than I can with my motorcycle with two.
Sure, but then you're just a car guy, and cars, boring.
Well, what's the issue? The issue is fuel is precious, and we really would like to travel, but fuel is precious. What are you going to do? Are you going to walk? Are you going to get a horse? Or are you going to take a look at this and say, well, you know, the vetter says if I'm streamlined and I got 16 horsepower, I can go 70 into a 30-mile-an-hour headwind and get 100 miles to the gallon. Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get a horse.
I want a 16-horse wagon, just like Clydesdales.
It's hard to beat the energy that's contained in gasoline. It's hard to beat it. Batteries can't do it.
Gasoline's very, very good at holding energy.
So taking a step away from the fairly serious and important topic of efficiency, I do want to talk about a few of the other designs on your webpage, because I had never – I poked around your webpage and I found the other designs and the designs that didn't make it. And there's some wacko stuff in here. I mean, I think there's – first of all, the wing thing. Where can I buy one? I want one.
You're whack. Most of those things are
– way to alienate the guest, Todd.
Oops. There that, you know, are tongue-in-cheek, but most of them are not. The wing thing, let me tell you about the wing thing. That'll still work, you know, but it's probably best to fly over water. and think if you had a wing you could sit on, and then you had a long tube that went up to a ski-doo. We didn't have ski-doos when I did that. I did that in 1970. And what if you controlled that ski-doo from 50 feet behind it, and the whole thing, the ski-doo floated, and you could turn it on and off from sitting on your wing, and your wing would skitter along, and you could turn the ski-doo on, it dragged you, okay? And then you could angle the incidents up on the wing and take off. And you could control flight over water with this thing. Now, it hasn't happened yet, but it should.
Sign me up. That sounds awesome.
Well, you know, I'm 69 years old. I'm going to be 70 next month. It's time. It's time for the next generation to be doing this stuff.
You're young, Todd. We can put you on it.
Yeah.
I'll pay money to see this.
You just want to see me fall.
Yes.
No, you can't. You fall in the water, so what?
Yeah, so what? It won't hurt. You'll be fine.
Got a dead man switch on the ski-doo. It stops.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
It's actually called a ram wing, and since I did that, there are a lot of ram wing airplanes being made today. They fall in the ultralight category. Well, not a lot. There are a couple. It's a good idea. It's a good idea, but it's mostly fun.
Oh, God, it looks like a blast.
How long can we afford to be spending energy on fun? Should we be drag racing? Should we be spending all of this energy on watching NASCAR guys go around in circles? Is the energy that cheap. We're just wasting it. Is it okay to do that? Well, I don't know. It might not be. I personally choose not to be a squanderer of this stuff. It may be being made as we speak. There are some people who think it is, and it may be. The Earth may just be this great petroleum generating machine that God made for us. I don't know. Nobody knows. But how can we be wrong? I'd rather err on the side of being conservative. I'd rather, we don't know if it's going to run out or not, but it might. And I would rather be your designer providing solutions for if and when fuel does become precious and then possibly run out. It's my goal. It's my job.
You know, I think would be an interesting fuel economy challenge would be to have design one of your vehicles or have the target be a vehicle that could pull the ram wing and have it take flight.
Well, I bet all you need is power for that.
Well, yes, but you know, how much power and how much fuel economy can you get out of it and still have a cool ram wing flight?
Yeah, well, but how would you use that to get the groceries? How would you use that?
I think of something like that.
You strap the groceries to the wing.
It's fun to think about, and it might be fun, but I'm just not sure that it's responsible implementation of your brain.
You need a catchy marketing thing to catch people's to put this onto people. You know, like Ford said, a Model T in every garage. You got a flying wing dropping bags of groceries at the house. People are going to notice.
Well, I design for myself. I've never designed for anyone else. I've never worked for anyone else. I design what I think is important to do. And I've been pretty successful at that. I've never had to tell anybody they need it. All I've ever had to do was say, look, this is pretty neat. This is making my life better. You might want to take a look.
So where should folks go if they want to get involved with or check out the fuel mileage contest?
Well, go to...
Or spectate, I guess. I don't know.
Well, go to www.craigvetter.com.
When is the contest?
Well, there are three this year.
Okay.
And the first one is a week from this Friday. It's at the Quail here in Carmel. And what I try to do is tag on to other people's events. Mm-hmm. And the Quail is it's probably the premier West Coast motorcycle concours. There are going to be some neat machines here. Dan Gurney is going to have his new V-twin Alligator up here. Dennis Manning is going to bring his 367-mile-an-hour Streamliner here. There are old bikes, old Indians, old Excelsiors. There are, you know, some of the new Ducatis. It's a concours, and it's held on a California golf course right next to the ocean. It's beautiful. Well, in addition to the concours, there's a ride on Friday morning on the May 4th. And on that ride, we go about 130 miles through the most beautiful roads around Carmel, California, down on the ocean and back. On that ride, there'll be 6 or 7 or maybe 10 people riding that ride along with all these other hot rod motorcyclists going the same speed. At the end of the day, we do a couple of laps around the Laguna Seca racetrack, and then we go back to the Quail, and we stop at a gas station, and we fill up. And the guy, the person who has consumed the least amount of fuel in dollars and cents is declared the winner. So it's a real ride. It's never more than the speed limit, but it's always pushing the speed limit. It's up over a mountain. It's down. It's into ferocious headwinds. And you've got to stay with the pack. I usually ride the last guy, but the whole pack is in front of me. There's 50 bikes, and I can see them all. And if you are part of the challenge, and if you get passed by me, you're out of the challenge. It means you're going too slow. It's real stuff, and it's the Quail. So and then we have another one just like it, and that'll be at the Vintage Days in Ohio, in the middle of Ohio, July 22nd, I think it is. And then we have another one in October, November. It goes from Las Vegas to Barstow. Remember, there used to be a famous desert race from Barstow to Las Vegas back in the 60s. You guys probably don't know about that.
Is that the one that was on any Sunday?
Yeah. Well, we do it the other way around. We go from Las Vegas to Barstow, and we do it on the road at posted speed limits in the winds and stuff. And the guy that goes from Las Vegas to Barstow and does it with the least amount of fuel in dollars and cents is the winner of that challenge. Those are the three challenges we have. And believe me, it takes a lot of effort to do this. I mean, I put everything I have into, you know, setting these things up and trying to do a good job and trying to encourage people like yourself to take this seriously and to realize that, hey, this is a new kind of racing. This is kind of fun. You know, I used to road race. I used to do hare and hound scrambles. I used to do motocross. I used to flat track. I used to short track. I used to do all that stuff. But this is equally exciting. It's just as exciting to be out there on the road to be staying with traffic and trying to figure out how to burn the least amount of fuel.
I'm already concocting ideas for how to build one of these.
Let me ask you this, because this is what I'm really curious about. What are you riding day to day?
My Honda Helix. I ride Streamliner. Now, the Streamliner is in the shop right now as I'm pulling all of the old paper covering off and replacing it with aluminum. But the other bike I have is another Honda Helix, because you got to have two of them. First of all, when one's in the shop, but then if you want to know what kind of improvements you might have made, you got to have somebody riding side by side with a standard Honda Helix, then with the Streamlined one. And I've made no difference in the engines. The engines are stock. So, yeah, I think I told you earlier, the Honda Helix is an amazing vehicle if you can get over the looks.
Well, Craig, it was really great talking to you. Thanks so much for being on with us tonight.
All right. Well, it's my pleasure, and thank you.
Cool. Yeah.
We'll have links on the show notes here. Mm-hmm. And go check it out. It looks like it'll be pretty cool.
It'll be pretty cool. It's him and a lot of other mad scientists going for... The aerodynamics thing is fascinating. I mean, that's just you always think aerodynamics and you think of all the people that get it wrong. You know, let's put the wing on the Civic so it'll be faster.
Well, that totally works.
It's like putting a wing on the Strom. No, wait.
Wait, who's done that?
Nobody that I know of yet.
Someone must have.
It seems likely. It's so weird because you think Vetter and you think of these windjammer fairings, which in fairness are extremely dorky looking.
Even for their time?
Well, that's the thing. At their time, they were cool.
This is the 70s, the 80s. I mean, that was the look, right? I mean,
yeah.
Especially once everyone saw how good those things work. Everyone's like, I've got, you know.
Wow.
Pick up my Goldwing, take it over here, strap on my fairing.
Now it's a bitchin' touring bike.
Right.
And I mean, if you look at even a modern Goldwing and you look at a windjammer and you sort of squint a little, you'll go, oh my God.
Yeah, Honda snapped that right up. And like, screw that dude.
Yoink!
I mean, okay, yeah, now it's a dated thing to us, but back then that was
the thing to have.
That was the thing, yeah.
My dad would have pulled mad tail on my first bike with that big fairing on it. Of course, his 76 Corvette that he sold when I was born might have done it better, but...
Right, yeah. You sure? Did the 76 Corvette, was there a cross-section there?
I don't know. I think he was like, he needed to get rid of it so they could buy a car they could put a kid in.
Right, I mean, but were they tooling around in the Corvette 9 months before?
Interesting. I always kind of figured I was made with genuine Volkswagen parts and services. Because they both had Beetles, too. So,
you know, that's a question you should put to your dad.
Quite a lot of my generation is probably made with genuine Volkswagen parts, I think.
That's a question you should put to your dad.
I don't even want to.
Or your mom.
Both of my parents were dirtbag ski instructors when they met, so.
So it could have been.
Lord only knows. Scary shit in the past there.
Nice.
Well, this is the same father who, when I called him and asked about push starting, he said, oh, yeah, I had a bunch of bikes, and that was the only way to start them. So just in case you were curious, folks, it's genetic.
You know, speaking of kind of geeky stuff, Icon's come out with some new gloves.
Oh, really?
Yes. They are touchscreen friendly.
Ooh, Aerostitch only had those a year and a half ago.
Did they?
Yeah.
What kind of – oh, I haven't seen those.
The Elkskins, when they have little funny thread in the finger that actually conducts.
Yeah, you could buy that conductive thread down at the hobby store and do that to any glove you have now.
Actually, another interesting point is if your gloves are leather and they're really scummy, they'll do it anyway.
Or moist. Scummy and moist
together, because water itself is not much of a conductor. Scummy water is a fantastic conductor.
Gee, what do I think of when I think of scummy and moist? What name pops to mind?
Doug.
No. Four letters, though. You know, I think I'm that much closer to having a tank bat that just has an iPad there instead of a map window.
You geek.
How cool would that be if it was the map there?
You're going to be that guy who rear-ends somebody.
Possibly. But
while playing Angry Birds.
Hear me out. No Angry Birds. Hear me out. So you got your iPad there where your map window would be, and it's hooked to your GPS, and it's scrolling.
So one of the guys Claire met at the store this week had that set up.
With an iPad?
With an iPad on the tank bag of his Tiger.
Really?
Yep.
That just sounds so... And then you could play Angry Birds on if you're on the 80.
If you're an 80 across Nevada. Or take that, you stupid pigs!
Or, you know, yet again, it would be one place where you could watch porn.
I don't think there's enough room in the suit. Hope your suit's waterproof. We better go to listener mail.
Well, you know, Gazi offers that waterproof liner. You'll be fine.
You just kind of walk in a little bow-legged. Excuse me.
To use the bathroom.
I just have to, pardon me.
I think I empty out my suit. This just take a minute.
So, listeners have opinions.
What the hell you say?
I know. Can you believe that?
No.
Dan K on ST.net says, so my podcatcher picks up the latest Wheel Nerds episode and I plug it into the car for the commute into work for some moto-related laughs. And what do I hear? An episode that will make no sense unless I'm watching a movie called Torque. WTF. I want my money back. Did he get any... Have we gotten any money?
I have.
Jerk.
How do you think I can afford tacos every day at the lunch cart?
Good God. You maniac. You've been embezzling.
Skimming it right off
of the... Did you get cheese on that taco? That was how I knew.
Extra
Chuck
cheese.
Was stealing money.
Extra cheese and extra avocado.
Son of a bitch.
I have been amassing a tiny, 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 very small fortune.
Well,
really only Dan's been the only one who's sent us any money. He was the only one that bought it when I said he had to pay.
Oh, okay.
Ha ha, Dan.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, the Torque episode, we're interested to hear what folks think, although apparently Torque is a really hard movie to hold on. Two different people have been like, what the hell? Netflix says I have to wait for Torque. It's probably Wheel Nerds listeners that are making you wait.
Yeah, they're making a run on all four copies.
Four copies of Torque in the United States. The good news is Amazon has it on mega sale.
Yeah, you could get it for like $5 after shipping.
Totally worth it.
Just get the movie. And
the beer will cost you more than the movie.
You want to drink a lot of
you
beer.
You really want the beer. Yeah.
Yeah, because we might do this with another movie, unless more people like Dan complain.
Yeah. And even if they do, we might do it anyway out of sheer unmitigated spite.
I've got that movie coming that Chris talked about, Chris mm-hmm. Gore.
Yeah.
Psychomania.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the preview for it?
Yes. I want to watch it. And we'll need some beer and some Jack Daniels.
I don't know about this. This movie kind of scares me. I mean, the big, bad, evil thing is a frog.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
It's really scary.
It's somebody's biology project.
Scary.
Yeah, we might have to do a commentary track with that movie and just send it to Chris.
We'll make it two episodes long just to really make everybody happy. See what happens when you make us angry.
You wouldn't like us when we're angry?
You made me do this. So Jen writes, got cut off by a motorcycle this morning. I hit the brakes hard and he lived. Did I do the right thing?
Yes, totally, because I'm still here.
Yeah, you did the right thing. Unfortunately, not all motorcyclists are as concerned with safety as other motorcyclists are.
And, you know, SUVs, they just blend right into the
mm-hmm. They're air. Invisible. In-freaking visible.
Yeah.
So he probably didn't see you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, those things are invisible. He didn't see you back there.
He was probably playing Angry Birds on the iPad strapped to his tank.
You made him miss the pigs and miss the 4 stars or 3 stars or whatever it is.
Yeah, it kind of gives new meaning to the whole phrase, the pigs.
Yeah. The pigs are after me. Which ones? The green ones with the pots on their head. What?
They're after my eggs.
Son of a bitch.
Help me.
Well, thank you, Jen, for not running over a motorcyclist. Motorcyclists everywhere, thank you, so that we can beat the shit out of them later for driving like an asshat.
Yeah, the thing I wish she had told us was what sort of bike it was. If it was a cruiser, if it was a
It could be almost sport bike. Anything. Billy's no boundaries.
That's true.
And she said he, so I'm just going to go ahead and broadly assume this was a Billy.
You know, speaking of Billys, I guess the Billys in Michigan must be celebrating now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they canned the helmet law.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the governor signed it. No more required helmets.
Okay, well, people who are going to wear helmets will still wear helmets, and the people who weren't were still not going
to. We'll still strap them to the tail of their bike.
Look at how color matched it is, and then when I pull in the driveway, I can pull it on, and Mom will be like, "Are you wearing your helmet?" And they'll be like, "Yes." All the time, Mom.
No, they carry the helmet for the girl that's going to hop on at the traffic light.
I thought we covered this myth.
It could still happen. Some of us are holding on to that hope.
But they aren't even wearing onesies. Girls don't dig guys who don't wear onesies.
That's why I always wear my onesie.
Are you listening, Billy?
Billy doesn't listen to podcasts.
Billy listens to
Limp Bizkit.
I don't know what the kids listen to these days.
Limp Bizkit.
Okay.
Wait, no, that's from the 90s, isn't it?
Probably.
What do the kids listen to this day?
Justin Bieber?
Miley Cyrus?
Yeah, I think so.
Justin Bieber?
Yeah, he's rocking some sweet Hannah Montana tunes.
I'm feeling old.
Yeah, me too.
God damn.
What have you learned this week, Chuck?
40's not old.
Just feels that way.
Shut up. What have you learned?
I've learned if you're going to have a small bike, you got to make it the ballingest. And that's all we got time for this week. Till next time, I'm Todd.
And I'm the real Chuck.
Ride safe, everyone.
We'll see you next week.
If you like this podcast, you can find more like it at wheelnerds.com. This has been a Wheel Nerds production, all rights reserved. Readings from other sources are the property of their respective owners and are used with satirical intent.